Hello and welcome again to Credit Shift News and Update. This week I'm Paul Sweeney, co-founder and chief strategy officer here at Webio, and today I am joined again by our CEO and co-founder at Webio, Cormac O'Neill.
Hey.
How you doing, Cormac?
Very good.
And we will be exploring some of the recent stories, events, reports and themes across the credit industry. But before we begin, Cormac, a big conference event for Webio last week. We were at the NPL conference in London. What do you take away from it?
Yes, we were indeed, Paul. We were at the European NPL event in London. We were actually one of the sponsors of that event. It was fantastic. And so NPL, just to explain, there may be some listeners who don't know, stands for non-performing loans. So this is the industry getting together, European industry. So we had people from all parts of Europe and beyond the US. And it was a really great 2 days, 2 day event in London. It was really, really great. In terms of the takeaways from it, I guess there was kind of like, for me, there was three overriding themes of the event when it comes to our industry or the NPL industry or even the PL industry, which is performing loans, which is becoming very, very popular in terms of managing those. So theme number one was consolidation. Okay, so there appears to be a lot of consolidation happening in the players in the NPL market, whether that's the investment side of things or the servicers of NPLs. So the folks, the organizations that manage the loans on behalf of investors or portfolios. So there appears to be a lot of consolidation happening in that industry. It's an industry where margins are tight. So I guess the more scale you get, the better efficiencies you get, and the better chance you have of maximizing your output or your return. So a lot of consolidation happened. That's going to continue. It'll be different by location, by geo, but certainly a theme that came through at the various conversations I had. So that'd be number one. Number two is regulation. I guess this one probably never goes away, but regulation in the industry, how that's happening, and there's an EU directive around managing and servicing non-performing loans, which tries to bring a bit of harmonization across the EU in terms of the regulation on NPLs and managing and servicing NPLs. So regulation and compliance was number two. And the final one was, hey, technology. And very much a key theme for the 2 days is organizations need to embrace and grapple with their technology, whether that's legacy systems that they have that they need to bring into the digital era. There's going to be a lot of investment in technology over the next, because we're kind of looking at a 5-year time frame here, in terms of where's the industry going 5 years. And I think digitalization is going to play a key role in the non-performing loan, particularly in the servicing side of it, but not just in the servicing, but also in the origination side of loans and offering of loans. More and more of these are going to move into the digital world, where servicing of loans can be done digitally and provisioning of loans or originating of loans to borrowers can all be done digitally. So there were really the three themes. It was great. Like Webio are now a European company. We've customers in Italy, Greece, Spain, and more European countries. So it was great to meet the folks from the various different customers that we have, that all came to London for the couple of days. So yeah, really, really good couple of days. Enjoyed it. And who doesn't like going to London? London's a great city.
I know you enjoy it. And of course, maybe people don't realize that Webio have such a growing presence in Europe. Mm-hmm. But okay, that's great to hear, Cormac. Let's get on with some of our general industry news. I was hoping to be able to skip some of this information this week and get into tech stuff, but just so much happening and just seeing information come across, I just thought we had to do it again. So just to start off with consumer credit, new research from Resolution Foundation in the UK states that consumer debt levels are actually down to their lowest level since 1999, down from 23% of household income in the mid-2000s to 13% today. they point out that during the pandemic, people paid down debt to the tune of $26 billion. And while debt has been increasing, it hasn't been increasing as fast as incomes. However, lenders have been tightening up access to loans, and higher inflation has helped erode the debt. Mm-hmm. So overall, British families are spending less servicing their consumer debts than pre-pandemic. However, this really is a case of credit shift, as people's debt has shifted from areas like credit cards to overdue utility bills. People asking citizens' advice for help, on average, have 1,000 less credit card debt, but have more than £500 higher bill arrears since COVID. Thought that was really interesting, Cormac. So hard to juggle all these numbers and figure out what's going up, what's going down, total amount of borrowings here, total amount of borrowings there, you know, interest rates, inflation. It's just all adding up to a more difficult to appreciate picture.
Yeah, I think when you peel back the layers on this one, Paul, like, you know, when you, at the start of that, you're thinking, okay, people are paying down debt, that looks good, you know, it seems to be very sensible, we got inflation rising, so that naturally eats up a bit of debt, for the want of a better term here, but then it looks like, and I like the way you threw in credit shift there, the name of the podcast that we're on right now, so I like that little plug there, Paul. But it looks like it is a credit shift. So from one form of debt to another. In this case, it's from credit card to higher bills. So while credit card debt may be falling, people are pushing out the bills, whether it's utilities or whatever other household bills they have, that they're looking to. So that's what that looks like. I'd imagine. I can only see those levels creeping back up again in terms of household debt over the next while, because with raising interest rates, there's always a lag effect, right? So, you know, if interest rates are rising, it takes time for that to feed in to the economy and to people's real income. So, you know, I think we saw the last interest rate rise at the end of last year. So that's going to start to feed through into the numbers, particularly as people have kind of like used the COVID savings that they have that were built up over COVID. So a lot of people would have done that, you know. But now I think we're going to see in the second half, Q2, Q3, Q4, we're going to see the real impact of rising inflation, rising interest rates, taking money out of people's pockets, and that's where we're going to see it. So there is that lag effect is what I'd say there, you know.
Okay. So the next thing here was new legislation on the credit card fees in the USA. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has finalized a rule that bans excessive card late fees late payment fees, lowering typical fees from $32 to $8. The new regulation is expected to curb fees that usually cost American families more than $14 billion a year. Under the 2010 Card Act, again in the USA, financial institutions can only charge fees that recover the costs associated with late payment. So I think it's great to see actions being taken in this sphere. Late fees are not a great business model in my view. And it's great to see that there's a focus on, you know, credit and collections. It's a function, but it really shouldn't be kind of, you know, profit making function. Like, you can't be just charging late fees and hoping that that's your business model. And I think it's interesting that if it's in America where it's tied to the costs of late payment, those late payment costs are just going to come down and down and down with the use of technology. So in America, it's going to be those fees for late payment are going to have to come under sustained downward pressure, I think.
It's a $14 billion market, Paul. Not my figures, your figures. While you mightn't think it's a great business model, there's $14 billion a year being generated from late fees. That's not too bad of a market, and I use that loosely. I'm not saying late fees are a good way of going about. Of course they're not, right? Of course they're not. But that's a lot of that's a lot of cha-ching right there. $14 billion being generated a year from late fees. You must have a better sustainable business model than that. I do agree with you. So anything that can be done, the court, look at the let's be clear here. If there are costs associated with late payments, there's going to be fees for that, right? So, you know, that's fair enough, and it's hard to argue about that. It's where late fees are just slapped on, you know, for the sake of slapping on late fees to generate income. That's where we have a problem with it. You know, I don't think anybody's got a problem if somebody has to collect late payments and suffer out-of-pocket expenses as a result. That's fair enough. But it's when it's used as a tool to gouge consumers, we would have a problem with that.
Well, I think from a trend point of view, I think it's clear to see that the pressure on the costs is going to come down. I think if you as a company, if your costs are too high, you're still going to come under the industry rate to collect these things in the States. So I would suspect that that's just going to be more pressure for digital, because if you're not collecting at a more efficient level, you're still going to be under the general rates.
Yeah, but just before you move on, right? So let's say you wipe out that $14 billion in income for credit cards. You know, what's going to replace that? Higher interest rates, higher credit card costs. You know,
I think they might go for subscription costs. They're also just there's fees on both sides of the transaction. Like merchants get charged, customers get charged. And I think you'll see from the buy now, pay later world that we've been looking at, that becoming a Prime member means that you pay a fee every year to have that card and use it and gain access to the other benefits associated with that card. So I think it just, if they want to grow back their margins, if they lose these fee-based revenue lines, they're just going to have to produce other lines of business. They're just going to have to add more value to you. Classical rents is what you're looking at there.
I like it.
Which brings us to our next topic very neatly, subscriptions. New research from Citizens Advice has found that 13 million people in the UK, or 26% of UK adults, have accidentally taken out a subscription in the last 12 months. They cover things like fitness apps, food delivery services, pet food, magazine subscriptions. It's easy to let a free offer run over its time limit or have a subscription auto-renew. So Citizens Advice is calling for clearer and more forceful legislation here, where consumers are offered a choice as they renew. Again, this kind of thing we are likely to see under duty of care. We have to see if... Like, you'd have to think that if Apple was managing all your subscriptions and your payments, Apple would just ping you up with, hey, this thing's trying to auto-renew, or would you like to auto-renew this? Or you haven't used this application in the last 6 months. Do you want to auto-renew it? And it will say no, right? So, again, more money going out the door in subscriptions.
Yeah, a couple of things on that, Paul. Like, definitely there has to be some form of duty of care around subscriptions and automatic renewals and all of this type of thing, and what people opt in for or opt out for. You know, because, like, you know, I'd rephrase that slightly, going 26% of UK adults found out that their kids accidentally take out subscription on their behalf in the last 12 months. I don't know if you have that experience of your kids accidentally subscribing for, I don't know, let me think of some of these games they play, Roblox or Candy Crush or whatever these things are called.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just the point being, it's very, very easy just to make, you know, one or two clicks and you're subscribed for something. You know, I think that's something that it's going to be looked at.
Absolutely. That brings us to our next section, buy now, pay later, AI and all things innovative technology. And again, neatly brings us to Apple. I like looking at Apple. They're they're doing some interesting things. And this month, it's Finance Kit. It's an API that allows developers to fetch transactions and balance information from Apple Card, Apple Cash, and Savings with Apple. Apple is partnering with personal finance apps such as YNAB, Monarch, and Copilot to roll out the API. One of these companies, Copilot, has said now users can experience real-time tracking of their finances without the need to share credentials or upload documents. This follows on from Apple's integration with open banking capabilities in the UK last September. Now, here's an additional interesting number, Cormac. 71% of the UK adults aged between 18 and 19 have an iPhone. That's a big number, right?
That's a huge 71%.
Number. And I'm thinking if I'm a young person with a smartphone and Apple tell me, hey, save on your subscriptions. Yeah. Don't be paying things you can't be paying. Don't be subject to scams. Let us manage your financial interactions. I think the trust level is there.
People are
going to start letting Apple do things for them.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, Paul. And we discussed this, I think it was last week, we were talking about the whole trust side of things and who do you trust more? And when I say
I'm talking
about that 18 to 19 age bracket. Do you trust your, you know, high street bank more, or do you trust your tech provider, in this case, Apple? A lot of them would probably take Apple beforehand.
You betcha.
71% of UK adults between 18 and 19 having an iPhone. We're sure it is. iPhones ain't cheap.
I looked it up yesterday.
Right? Wow. In comparison to others, like, you know, I mean, that's staggering. Staggering number.
It drops down, like, as you get older, right? Even 19 to 20, it's like 65% or something. Yeah. And it goes down to 40% as you hit older categories in the 60s. But the point, of course, is that young people are the lead market. They're the ones that are going to move. They're the ones that if you get, you might keep. And they're your growth factor.
Yeah.
And again, it's just when you start to see all the different services start to come together. I'll move on to the next point, just to reiterate the kind of, I guess, the trend I'm seeing here. So rumors are now starting to circulate around a massive update to Apple Siri. Apple has just launched a new generation of M3 chips, and they have long been an advocate of on-device processing. So people are expecting a new, more powerful assistant to emerge. Coupled with the Apple Finance announcements we've just gone through, it would be interesting to have an assistant that could help you with advice around how to spend your money or how best to finance a purchase for your best financial outcomes. I think Apple will be super careful here and enable you to integrate and interrogate your information across your apps, and then to present that information to you in some kind of a summary. Just like newspapers were end run by Google, I think people here trust Apple, and I think it has a huge disruption potential for them to end run banks and other financial institutions directly to the end customer. So what would it take for Apple to play the role of agreeing to manage a repayment plan for a customer? What would it take for them to be able to do that? And it's not a lot. When you start to see all the things they have in front of them here, they could do a lot of work. So again, we're seeing Apple in there, but they're not the only ones in the cool kids area. Monzo raised $450 million at a $5 billion valuation. Monzo are a digital-only UK bank with 9 million customers and 400,000 business accounts. And it's starting again another expansion to the US with this funding. The round was led by Sound Alarm Bells, Capital G, Google's venture arm, and follows on the bank's announcement in 2023 that it was making some profits. One of my favorite commentators, Simon Taylor of FinTech Brain Food, points out that Monzo customers love the product in a way that is hard to describe. It became a movement for people starting work in the shadow of the financial crisis, and they backed this up with Apple-like attention to detail in how they built their product. And now they are backed by Google too. So again, it's a digital-only bank in this instance, But again, you can see that the experience here is everything. And I think the way that Monzo has built a brand with these customers, with the experience they're able to give them, is a real kind of high level mark of what other financial institutions have to achieve. I mean, they've really done a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. So I guess, Cormac, that run was
yeah, there's
big tech is coming. Like, yeah, tech is coming.
Some, and there's some exciting stuff in there. Like, if we go back to the Apple discussion you had, Paul, around the financial assistant and what it would take. I mean, this is something that we've said is coming down the line a number of years ago. I mean, it was just the logical outcome of what was happening. And what would it take? I mean, for Apple for people to agree, and for Apple to manage repayment plans, it's really all about the data. I mean, if they have the relevant data that's required to manage a repayment plan, and you need to have the full, you need to have the full 360 of somebody's financial situation, because you can't A, propose a repayment plan without B, knowing somebody's full status, full circumstances, or else the plan's going to fail. You know, so if you don't know that there's this loan that's due over here that's outstanding, that can't be incorporated into a new repayment plan. So data plays a huge part in Apple or anybody being able to deliver a financial assistant to that level. So that, but look, you know, that will happen. Yeah. You know, I know open banking has kind of had a start stutter Bert, so to speak, but it will be a game changer here on this one. Just one, actually, as you were going through it there, and I was thinking about buy now, pay later, one thing that did come out of the event, the NPL, Europe NPL event in London, was there was a discussion around, you know, where are the opportunities, right? So obviously these are people who manage loans, and therefore, whether it's performing loans or non-performing loans, there needs to be opportunity to manage those. And one of the discussion was around the opportunity around buy now, pay later loans coming down the track. So a number of people at the event saw the whole buy now, pay later space as a potential area for business when it comes to managing non-performing loans. So I think that was quite interesting in terms of what the people in the industry were seeing and what they're looking at in terms of their opportunities. So I think we need to watch that space.
Yeah, it's super, super interesting. But again, like we know where companies actually are with their technology, and, you know, it's a long way from completely integrated information, ability to generate plans on the fly, ability to actually enter into agreements digitally through any channel. You know, companies are a long way from this, but this is directionally correct. Like, this is what's going to happen. And you will look back on the days of saying, you know, you got a letter and someone phoned you, and then you made an agreement and you went to the bank and you put in money, or even you logged onto the bank and transferred money. I mean, I tried to transfer money to somebody yesterday to pay for some books that I was buying, and I couldn't believe how hard it was to add that person to my banking details, all the extra details I needed about them and their bank to be able to transfer money to them. That's all has to go. Like, all that kind of friction has to go. And like, we know that running a conversation and saying, I want to be able to now understand that this person might have difficulty paying, we need to do an income and expenditure evaluation with them, and then adjust our offer to them based on that. That is all automatable. Like, that is all automatable. So I think I can't see any reason why that wouldn't happen, like, over
the only thing, and I know with my own, and I have a high street bank. Yeah, I've got a Revolut too, but I've got a high street bank for my main banking, and it's cumbersome to add somebody I want to pay to that. However, it is also comforting to know that if I am compromised, if my account is ever compromised, if I'm ever hacked, that it's difficult for somebody to add in a payee or somebody that they want to pay and suddenly empty my bank account. So I think as long as you have the level of fraud that's out there, the ability to add new payees or payers to your account is going to be a little bit clunky. And there's good reason for that. You know, like the way mine works at the minute, I got my mobile thing, but then I got one of these little kind of like card reader things, and I got to stick my card in there, and I got to put in some numbers, and then I got to take those numbers, and I got to key those into the screen. And then, you know, 5 hours later, I've got somebody set up. And that is clunky, but it is also kind of comforting. I get it. I understand that, you know, my account's ever hacked. It's difficult.
We're on different sides of this. Like, that's all going to go. Like, it's going to go. And it's like, it reminds me of that example we used before of the travel company that had 30 seconds of searching the internet, and it had a longer search on the screen. And people's experience of it was, I think they're just looking harder than everybody else. Like, they're doing a bigger search. Mm-hmm. And that time was like a symbol of that search. But there was no technological reason why that couldn't have been near instant. But I think as well, it was interesting that the reason I had to go through that, adding the payee to a bank account, was they didn't want to use PayPal because PayPal took too big a chunk of their money in the transaction. They were a small trader. The money meant something to them, and that like $6 or whatever on the transaction, they would have for themselves. Yeah. Yeah. So if someone comes along with a PayPal, like press the button and pay the bill to somebody, and it's 1 or 2% as opposed to 6 or 7%, then they're going to do very well. Just a final bit of information this week. We do like to point out government reports and analyst reports that might be of interest to our audience. This week, it's the UK government's Debt Fairness Charter. Now, the Debt Fairness Charter is for people who owe personal debt to central government. It outlines how people repaying these debts should be treated, as well as some additional actions that people may like to take to help along in this process. Now, most parties, of course, welcome the principles that are outlined in the report. But I couldn't help but notice there were two carve-outs in the document. One is debt that is the result of fraud or criminal activity, which will be dealt with under existing policies, practice and legislation. But the other is debt owed to local authorities, in that your local authority will have to have its own approach to managing debt. Now, we see a lot of activity in the area of local government debt and local government needing to have processes in place. I think it would have been good to extend that over to local government and maybe give them some sort of unifying, but I'm sure that they'll have to adhere to these kinds of principles anyway. There are plenty of other government departments it covers, including child maintenance services, Department of Work and Pensions, driver and vehicle licensing agencies, His Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Services, His Majesty's Revenue and Customs, Home Office, Legal Aid Agency, and Student Loans Company. Now, I'm sure, as I was saying, that the principles of the document will be used to frame service agreements in the future and will form some kind of a basis of requests for tenders in the future. So it's good to see that some care has been taken in this area, because the pressure that falls on people when they fall behind in paying these kinds of bodies is immense. It would also be nice to see some emphasis put on prompt payment and fairness being defined in terms of how the government in turn pays and refunds the general public. We see a lot of times when people are waiting on payments from other services in the government or in local authorities, and that puts them under a lot of pressure. So I think, Cormac, just to kind of round this out this week, looking at a lot of intelligent assistance playing a large role here, fairness playing a large role, regulation, open banking.
Yeah.
Great tip.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot. Just to go back on the local authorities and local governments, local councils. So this is an area that historically, we haven't really looked at in terms of providing solutions to some of the challenges they have until recently. And that's really been driven by kind of like inbound traffic into us. And it's fascinating, like local government, local authorities and councils, there's a lot of debt out there that these bodies, you know, they need to get it, because if they don't collect the money, I mean, where do the services come from? These services need to be paid for, and if they're not going to be paid through local and you're going to central government, well, you know, it's coming out of your taxes in some shape or form. So I was amazed by the level of local government and local authority debt that's out there. So you know, it certainly seems to be a problem that's brewing, and it's one that we're looking at in terms of, you know, how can we help in that area. You know, obviously the from an enterprise, from a company's point of view, the buy-in cycles of government bodies tend to be pretty long, pretty onerous. So that's one of the main reasons we haven't looked at it until now. But definitely there's a challenge there, one that's worth engaging with and looking to see how can we solve it.
It's a big, as you were saying, Cormac, we addressed this a little bit in some earlier credit shifts. The government, local authorities are under like a lot of financial pressure now, and they have to take care of these services and make sure they're getting paid properly, that taxes are being paid or local taxes are being paid. And if they're not able to finance themselves, then the services they're providing to the community start to shut down. Correct. So you are seeing libraries closed down. You're seeing like local parks being closed because there's no one there to maintain them, etc. So it will have a material effect on people's lives. And I think I've always trying to keep in mind that there are plenty of people out there who have difficulty reading official documents, who may be moving from one place to another, where English is not their first language, where they have maybe difficulties hearing or seeing. And while, you know, there are, of course, people who just don't pay, but there are plenty of people who, if given another opportunity to interact or another way to engage, they would be able to, you know, get in contact, make their point, be registered as having contacted, organize their payments, you know, figure out how it's the best payment schedule, best payment method for them, and just respond to what they're capable of doing, as opposed to saying, you need to pay this by then or else, because those kind of cascading failures just affect those who are really at the most disadvantage, and the cascades in their lives are very meaningful and have material effects on them.
Agreed.
Okay, folks, thank you for joining us again this week. We have again gone through some of those updates on the figures that matter, the updates in technology, and again some updates in the reports that might impact your strategic planning in the future. Do check out the Webio website for updates as to what Webio is all about, and do keep an eye on the Credit Shift channel for more long-form interviews that we'll be dropping in the near future.